Welcome to the FDD Events Podcast. I'm Cliff Mate, founder and president of FDD, and pleased to share with you the following conversation. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so you don't miss out on future FDD events.
Welcome and thank you for joining us for this virtual discussion hosted by the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. It's Wednesday, April 3rd. I'm Jonathan Schanzer, Senior Vice President for Research here at FDD. Today's panel will discuss the outcomes and implications both domestically and internationally of Turkey's local elections. The AKP and by extension, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan suffered their greatest electoral defeat. By comparison, the main opposition Republican People's Party, the CHP, delivered their best electoral performance since 1977. Many observers assume that these local elections were inconsequential because Erdogan won the presidency last year, but that was wrong. The country appears to have lost confidence in Erdogan, they've lost confidence in the AKP, and they've lost confidence in their government. Is this finally the beginning of the end for Erdogan? In power as president until 2028, Erdogan will be. But does he have a clear mandate after these elections? I'm now pleased to introduce our panel for today's discussion. Guldem Atabay is the former director of research and strategy at Ageli & Company Asset Management in Istanbul. She also served as Turkey economist for broker UniCredit Menkul Değerler, chief economist at Express Invest, and economist at Raymond James Securities. Guldem has an MA in economics from Hacettepe University in Ankara. Sinan Cidi is a research fellow here at FDD, our non-resident research fellow, and he's an expert on Turkish domestic politics and foreign policy. Sinan was the executive director of the Institute of Turkish Studies based at Georgetown University and continues to serve as an adjunct associate professor at Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. He was born in Turkey and educated in the UK. Howard Eisenstadt is an associate professor of Middle East history at St. Lawrence University. Howard's research focuses on nationalism and Islam in the 19th century Ottoman Empire, as well as the history of the Turkish Republic. His recent work has focused on contemporary Turkish domestic and foreign policy, especially on issues of rule of law, minority rights, and the reshaping of political culture under the AKP. Atilla Yeşilada is a renowned political analyst and commentator. He is known throughout the finance and political science world for his thorough and outspoken coverage of Turkey's political and financial developments. In addition to his extensive writing schedule, he is often called upon to provide his political expertise on major radio and television networks. Moderating today's conversation will be Yavuz Baydar. Yavuz is the editor-in-chief of Ahval, a trilingual independent online news site focusing on Turkey. Since the attempted coup of 2016, he has lived in exile in Europe. He was among the co-founders of the independent media platform P24, which aimed to monitor the media sector and the state of journalism in Turkey. Before we dive into our feature discussion, a few words about FDD. For more than 20 years, FDD has operated as a fiercely independent, nonpartisan research institute exclusively focused on national security and foreign policy. As a point of pride and principle, we do not accept foreign government funding. For more on our work, please visit our website, fdd.org, and follow us on Twitter or X at FDD. That's enough for me now. Yavuz, over to you.
Hello, everyone. Marking its centennial, still ongoing until late October this year, Turkey undergoes a period of massive political tremors accompanied by a series of deep crises topped by the one shattering the economy. An irony or a wink of history, as Howard might perhaps agree. Political ground is a rugged terrain, and the citizenry, to use a term by Professor Hamit Bozarslan, lobotomized. Two consecutive elections, one in last May, ending with the victory of President Erdogan's power alliance, and the one 4 days ago, delivering him, after 22 years of iron rule, severest blow, lifting the main opposition above the dominant AKP in numbers. In rough terms, what we have witnessed in March 2031 is this. With a turnout lower by 6 percentage points than the average ever, 78%, main opposition CHP landed as the first party by 37.7%, as the AKP losing nearly 10 percentage points, coming down to 35.5%. The AKP lost 8 million voters nationwide, meaning its city municipalities declined from 39 to 24. CHP's gains were significant, from 21 to 36. And another blow for the AKP was the solid stance of the pro-Kurdish Dem Party in the mainly Kurdish province southeast, party increasing its city municipalities from 8 to 10. Puzzling situation, to say the least. And probably we'll begin the word puzzle. How deeply were you surprised by the result, and why? Just brief answers, please, beginning from Howard.
I think that for myself, I didn't have a real confidence about what the outcome was. This was certainly a much bigger win for the opposition than I expected. But given the state of the economy and the different stakes in municipal elections over national elections, the opposition did better than expected, but I think everybody expected them to do well.
Gürdem?
Well, it was the latest polls of last week before the elections that it was showing the Istanbul and Ankara will be strongly gained by the opposition CHP, but the surprise was mainly in the inner Anatolia parts of Turkey. So that was a big surprise. And the melting down of the opposition E party perfectly well into CHP voters, that was another big surprise. So this is basically it.
Atilla, were you caught by a surprise by this result?
Extremely. After the May elections, I thought democracy in Turkey was almost done. Erdogan was almost certain to win the local elections because the entire opposition were in disarray. And he would steamroll over the opposition. Over the last month, I came to think, based on polls and expert commentary, that CHP will keep the three major cities. But as Gildem said, I had not expected them to do so well in the interior parts of the Anatolia, as well as grabbing several major boroughs in Istanbul and Ankara.
Big magnitude, indeed. And Sinan?
I mean, I'm surprised that it took this long for a electoral earthquake to hit the AKP. I remember the fallout from the 2001 election in, you know, the 2002 election following the 2001 financial crisis in Turkey, which just, bludgeoned the DSP-led government at the time because of just the sheer economic fallout. And arguably, the conditions today are worse. So it took the electorate, I think, some time. But I'm also surprised at the level of complacency on part of the governing party, simply because, you know, I've become accustomed to thinking, you know, what is Erdogan thinking that I'm not thinking of, right? Just these lackluster mayoral candidates for big cities like Istanbul and Ankara. You know, we assumed, or some of us assumed, that essentially he was going to pull another rabbit out of the hat, and it basically just did not happen. And on the, you know, his concession speech, he was weak. He looked deflated and just worn out.
Maybe he was weaker than ever. Let's continue with the main takeaways then. What are the most striking takeaways? How do we explain, for example, the severe contradiction between the election, the results in May 23 and elections and this one, main reasons of the results? How do we read into this? The word is, the floor is with Howard.
So I guess I would point to three things that distinguish the elections this time versus the elections in May and June. The first is, as Sinan noted, the lackluster candidates on the part of the AKP. I think that there's a logic to why they were chosen, but it turned out to be a bad logic. They were terrible on the campaign trail. The second I would say is that the AKP took a tremendous effort to keep inflation in check in advance of the May and June elections. Once it began to sort of normalize economic policy, then the real burdens of a decade of mismanagement became evident, and Turkish voters were feeling it acutely on a day-to-day basis. And the third is that because these are municipal elections, the calculations on the part of the electorate are quite different. They tend to be more strategic. They tend to be more focused on goods and services, they're less concerned with sort of the big cultural issues that the AKP tends to capitalize on in general elections.
Mm-hmm. And Sinan?
I mean, we could spend forever talking about this, but I'll make a few brief comments that struck out to me. The first thing that my biggest takeaway was, if this was a game of battleships, I think Erdogan's flagship has just been mortally wounded. And my assumption at this point is this will be very hard for him to turn this around administratively, economically, but also from a perspective of DNA design and just how Erdogan responds to defeat, which we've seen very few times. But it really is a horrific defeat for him. And he's not accustomed to that. And I don't necessarily know what he's going to do about it. The initial conversations that he seems to have had with his cabinet, again, is play the blame game, fire a bunch of people, but never touch him. He seems to be like, nobody seems to identify that essentially he might be the object of the problem at this stage. The second thing I took away from this is, you know, it's bittersweet at some level for Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu, which I think is the biggest winner out of all of this, right? As you know, he's really elevated himself to the national stage. I am going to go on record here and basically say at some stage in the future, I believe we're going to see a President İmamoğlu if the presidential system remains, or a prime minister if it does not.
And not Mansur Yavaş.
No, I think, you know, the İmamoğlu factor is just compelling. You can see that X factor that Turkish politicians seldom display in terms of just how persuasive they can be of the electorate. And it's bittersweet. I say it's bittersweet because I just look at this and think, I watched his victory speech, as did many of us, and think, well, you know, had Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu not insisted and imposed his candidacy last year on the Nation Alliance, and İmamoğlu was allowed to run as the presidential candidate, I can't help but think that on Sunday night, we could have possibly witnessed the President İmamoğlu congratulating the CHP for its, you know, splendid, you know, local election performance. And so, you know, in my opinion, that's been, you know, denied him. And he won about by the same percentage points as mayor in Selma, which honestly is not the same comparison. He won about by the same margin as he was projected to defeat Erdogan last year as president.
Mm-hmm. A political earthquake indeed, Güldem. Your takeaways? This is, of course, there are losers and winners in this one. There are many losers, and there are also a few winners, maybe just one. How do you see that from that perspective?
Well, from political perspective, the losers are definite. It's the opposition has consolidated under CHP. That's a fact. That seems like a fact. The Kurdish dam exists on stage. CHP as the main opposition party, and of course the emergence of Yeniden Refah Partisi, the small Islamist party that took 6.1% I think, percent mm-hmm. of the votes. I think it's there to stay for a while, since there are the reaction votes to Erdogan's Erdogan's way of managing economy and way of managing its relations with Israel under the current circumstances. So these are basically the winners and the losers in my opinion. But the winners will be shaped in the future again. I think around Erdogan there will be people who will stay along with him, like with Mehmet Şimşek. I think he's one of the guys that, who will stay because there's no other way.
Minister of Economy, yes.
Minister of Economy, as the minister of in control of everything in the economy, because if he's eliminated, we'll directly go into another very hard, very rough current account crisis in Turkey very immediately, and there will be early elections, and everything will be messier than ever in Turkish economy for the near term. I think he'll stay. The losers, I don't know. Erdogan will pick. I think the previous guys who were in charge of the economy are responsible, but then again, it was President Erdogan's directions that they've covered during that time, during 2018 and 2023. So Erdogan mm-hmm. has to look at himself, and I don't think he will ever do that in that sense. And CHP is its future depends on whether it will be successful as it is in Istanbul and Ankara across Anatolia. So that's something we'll have to see for the time mm-hmm. in the time ahead.
Attila, main takeaway, it seems, as I read the economists looking at the reasons why this 8 percentage point loss, bleeding, the massive bleeding of AKP, they saw a main reason as the main takeaway also as the slap on the face by the pension holders, especially. And it seems, if you look at the latest report by Yeniş Şafak, reporting from the Central Committee meeting, Erdoğan was speaking and mentioning that he failed, in his own terms, of course, he failed to deliver for them the whatever the pension holders expected. Is it also your takeaway from these elections that that it's the economy stupid?
It is largely the economy, though I would like to complement the views of the previous speakers with some nuances. Clearly, pensioners wanted more. And I think first time ever Erdoğan understood that there are limits to pork barreling. Giving them what they want would have collapsed the budget and it would have led to an irreversible calamity. But there is another economic aspect that hasn't been discussed in this panel, which is that these election results are to a large extent the payback for his crony regime. Now, Erdoğan's connections to big construction contracting companies, etc., are not things that matter to the daily lives of people in the cities. But when you become poorer by the day and see everyone that's associated with the municipality, AKP, and Islamic tariqats get rich and also advocate to you more poverty, you react. And I think that's one aspect of these elections that will not, cannot change. Erdoğan's is a crony regime and he cannot change the main tenets of that. Finally, we need, again, my personal view, Erdoğan, his family, and AKP no longer represent the true Islamist streak in Turkey. That role has now reverted to new welfare party. This is the first major and irreversible split in the long tradition of Turkish political Islam. The last one was Erdoğan and his colleagues splitting from legendary Erdoğan in late 1990s.
Interesting. You call it irreversible split.
Yeah.
Some other observers see that as a sort of, you know, a temporary migration from AKP to Yeniden Refah, to the welfare, new welfare party.
No, I think the economic votes, the economic dissent, can be reversed. We can talk about that. But the all polls identify 12 to 15, maybe 18% of Turkish voters are hardcore Islamist and ideology does matter to them. Mm-hmm. And for them, Erdoğan is no longer the representative of that tradition. I can cite various reasons from LGBT. You know, LGBTQ is infectious, of course, and Erdoğan is not doing anything about it. But the handshake with Sisi cost him. But most importantly, I think we need to take Turkey's Islamic tradition seriously. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people believe in the tenets of the Quran, you know, modest living, humble, humility, etc. Erdoğan and AKP no longer represent these. So in my view, they're looking for a new home. And as long as that ideological base is intact, they're going to keep voting for new welfare, which is going to become a self-reinforcing cycle in the sense that new welfare will gain 7% of the vote in the next elections and will get significant representation in the Grand Assembly.
Okay. I know, Sinan, you want to ask a question to economists, but can we take it a little bit later? Because where we are at the moment is that we came to an interesting point to speaking about the loser, the AKP. But as in my conversation with Professor Özer Sencar, congratulating him for his prediction, he mentioned something. He said something interesting. He said, general elections are general elections, but in each and every local election, this is some sort of a verdict for the voter of the you know, performance after each and every general election. So this is where we are. This is sort of a lesson to deliver to the political actors. But Howard, we spoke about the AKP, and in line with that, can we speak about, as some claim, because you know CHP now ending as the first party since 1977 and another top position in 1989, historically speaking, what does it signify? Kemalism on the rise, or a strong message from the electorate to end polarization, kind of an alignment, a call for normality, or a massive wave of protest votes seeking temporary shelter by way of migrating out of Erdogan and also from E Party, I suppose, and massively, of course, tactical votes from Dem Party. How do you see the CHP's current situation?
So I guess I'd like to make two points. And I'll always defer to Sinan, who, after all, wrote the book on the CHP, on issues of the CHP. But I think that the CHP has actually taken a page out of the early AKP, in that the early AKP sort of presented itself as a party of effective governance and providing services. And I think at the municipal level, at least, that's what the CHP did this time. And that's what Turkish voters want, particularly from the municipal government. I guess I'd also like to just interject that I'm less, optimistic or less pessimistic, as it were, about the AKP's long-term future than my colleagues on the panel. I think there's a danger of overreading municipal elections, particularly in a moment of high economic crisis. I think that there are lots of ways in which the AKP can right itself, both politically and through the intensification of authoritarian tools, as we saw in Van this week, where the Dem candidate was elected and was not allowed to take office. That's been a pattern after the 2016 elections. It's a pattern that continued after the last municipal elections. I don't think that we can assume that the AKP has lost its political gas. There are lots of ways that it can correct itself for the next 4 years, and has lost access to its authoritarian tools.
Sinan, you know, current barometer shows, of course, the big changes. And as again, referring to Professor Sanjar, my conversation with him, he mentioned, underlined something. He said, it is important that for me, the CHP ended not as a first party. This is a de facto, maybe a different situation. It may seem higher points, but and he was saying this to deliver hopes that the CHP leadership would read into this situation more carefully and more deeply than ever before. Where did the votes come from? Support votes, tactical votes, and what the vote overall means. But again, the same question. There are some interpretations that, you know, the current, you know, or historically, into historic context, the votes, again, you know, swinging between sort of, you know, conservative vote and back to, like in 77, to you know, centristic party, Republican Party, CHP. You know, you are an expert on CHP. How do you see that?
So we haven't seen the breakdown of the numbers, and we'll have to wait to see who voted how in each province and whatever. That will take time to process. But my initial thought is, looking at the CHP's sort of quote success has to be probably tempered, I would say. You know, the 37 point whatever percentage of the vote it got, I think it really has to be tempered, because my honest opinion on this is it's not really comparable to the success it achieved in 1977 or during the 70s under the prolific rise of, you know, Bülent Ecevit, right? I say that because, you know, the Ecevit successes that really elevated the party's popular standing were not just limited to the leader's charisma, but the party itself really did reorient itself and really invest in its sort of appearance, its ideology, its doctrinal strength, according to the conditions of the times, which really attracted labor unions, have, you know, became organically linked to a lot of voters that really was programmatically recognizable. if you look at the CHP under Özgür Özel, the, you know, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, Deniz Baykal, I would say the one uniting factor in all of them is this is, for me, organization is still a clown show. I mean, one of the things that we would still, I would still iterate is, you know, the Nation Alliance, which ran last year, has basically been decimated. It's just gone, you know, that led by the CHP that was trying to defeat Erdogan, right? We've seen a blustery Özgür Özel. We don't really know what the CHP stands for. I think the votes delivered to the CHP are more representative now of just an exasperated, you know, public in Turkey who just do not feel they have another outlet other than to vote for the main opposition, which looks probably for now less crooked, less corrupt, less incompetent. And I say that in a tempered manner, because if you could compose an opposition field of parties and politicians that really wanted to lose this local election, you would do exactly what they did in the last 3 months. I think, you know, you look at characters like Meral Akşener, you look at, even Özgür Özel, who was not really, I think, really hitting hard and programmatically on targeting things like rule of law issues, the absolute collapse of the economy. I wanted him to stand up there at some point, like Erdal İnönü in the early 1990s, and squeeze a lemon and say, this regime is squeezing you to the core. And that was going to be the main question that I had for The Economist, which we can touch upon later, but I just want to plant in the back of their mind. If you could possibly just lay out for our listeners, and just, I don't think people necessarily know in the United States or Europe, just how bad the economy is in Turkey and what it means for the average person. It's at some stage, but that's my answer for now.
Question to Güldem and Attila, in continuity with that. We now know, I think you may all agree, that there was an implosion, definitely for Meral Akşener's E-Party, for the great disappointment maybe for supporters, but delight for the others, because to many her choreography was really mind-boggling, finally, she was delivered a very bad verdict. But also implosion in terms of numbers were noted for, because this was a test, noted for Ahmet Davutoğlu's Gelecek Partisi, which won only 34,000 nationwide votes, and Ali Babacan's Deva Party, 138,000. And those parties are basically off the map, one could say, but very disproportionately represented in the current parliament. Something to discuss maybe. But again, back to the table of six, last year's hope booster is gone. The sort of consensus seeking is gone. And maybe Turkey, if the conjuncture allows, we don't know, goes to a sort of a two or three party system. Can we foresee that?
Okay, I'll try my shot. Well, we're not there yet. I think as Mr. Cidia said, it's the CHP is has gained a lot of votes that it didn't really expect it to win in this election. So it's very strong. Whether it will ride with the strength and really restructure the party is yet to be seen. So whether this kind of votes will stay with them or there'll be maybe a change of leadership within E Party, which I really do not expect to see it emerging again, but some things will change and CHP might be losing the votes that it has gained in a couple of years' time ahead. So we don't know that. The party will be managed by, obviously, Mr. Özgür Özel, the party leader, İmamoğlu as the Istanbul mayor. Everybody's looking up to him. What he does, where he signals, what he says is really important. And Mr. Yavaş, even he says that he will not be running for another round in Ankara mayorship. Whether he'll stay, will he'll run for a presidential election is yet to be seen. So maybe CHP will have struggles within itself. So we're not there yet. But obviously, in the in the events of one that we saw today, that CHP deputies there having a walk on the streets together with the Kurdish people, the Kurdish party members, top level members, it's something new for Turkey, because CHP was always like looking from the sidelines to support the Kurdish votes, Kurdish parties, and even if this they were being elected for local governments and they were just being removed from it, CHP was really not taking sides with them. So things are changing in Turkey, and I think things will get faster to change in the years ahead. So I don't know the answer to your question, whether we have two or three parties in the years ahead, but mainly, if this current system stays, we'll have the Kurds, obviously, we'll have a right party, a center-right party, an Islamist party in currently as AKP and Yeniden Refah, and CHP stands at a very strong position to attract the other votes within the country. So three parties, yes. Four or five, I don't know. Time will show, I think.
Atilla, do you know?
Yes, I do. I always know. It's a dual system, so we need to analyze the situation at the level of the presidential contest and the parliamentary elections. I think, yeah, from the viewpoint of the presidential election, Turkey has moved to a two-party system. There would be Erdogan and whoever rivals him. The others will at the end support Erdogan's rival. In the parliamentary system, it's more nuanced. Turkey has a very long parliamentary tradition. It's based on several parties. And also the split in the Islamist tradition, as well as the renewed strength of anti-immigrant party, a one-issue party, but an issue that is becoming permanent, as well as the partial rise of the left, tells me that Turkey shall remain in a multi-party system. If I have the time, I would like to say, I would like to run a tally of how much of CHP's success is due to one-off events and how much of it can be considered permanent.
Now, maybe Howard, we all see and seem to agree, there is a widespread agreement that this result places an enormous responsibility for the CHP because it has been the hub of magnetic field of so many votes, and day one, on day two, day three, we have already seen what might give hints of what Erdogan and his government, his power alliance, could do, reflecting, spilling over to the predominantly Kurdish provinces, and one being the center of riots, because the elected Mayor Abdullah Zeidan, elected by 55%+, is denied his right to resume mayorship, and this led to, this was a spark that led to an explosion. Now the riots are still continuing. As a result, Bitlis and Van are basically close to entries and exits, and also curfew is declared in Siirt Pervari town. Howard, looking at it from the historic perspective, we have seen this trustee appointments massively in following the 2019 local elections, and also we remember the wave of violence and the dark times following the general elections 2015, the summer, the dark summer. Are we seeing the same movie, and why again? Because people should have gotten used to this, and it's still the same scenes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's relatively easy for the AKP to target prior HDP and now Dem. I think there's a fairly significant portion, probably a majority of Turkish citizens, are quite okay with pushing pro-Kurdish voices to the periphery, jailing them, taking them out of office. There was no popular uproar when they did it to the HDP. I don't expect there to necessarily be a terrible popular uproar this time around. I'm glad the CHP is stepping forward. It did not do so the last time around. But the to me, the bigger question is, is the AKP willing to go after CHP municipalities as well? The prosecution of Imamoglu is ongoing. I think
the trial is dated on April 25.
The risks and costs are, of course, much harder. Repression is easy, but it's not free for an authoritarian government. And I think that the costs of open repression of the CHP is much higher than the cost of open repression of Dem. I think that it's going to be a rough go. I don't expect the AKP to simply take the loss and move on. I expect them to use every tool in their very large quiver to regain power and regain access to rent, whether that means transferring more responsibilities over to the governors, that's a possibility. Whether it means additional trials, that's a possibility. The municipalities won. The opposition won municipalities, and that's a very good thing. But the control of the courts, control of security services, control of the executive is still in the hands of the AKP. And while this is not Putin's Russia, it's not Sisi's Egypt, it is also not a liberal democracy.
Mm-hmm. Sinan, it seems, by what the comment of Howard, that this is a sort of a test drive for CHP to see from the vantage point of Erdogan how democratically resilient this time the party will be, and wise enough taking lessons from before. Will the CHP be able to be up to it?
We'll see. But just to reflect on that and bounce off something that Howard just outlined, I agree with this. Look, what's at stake for Erdogan right now? He's no idiot. He's no sort of, rookie at this. What's at stake for him now, based on Sunday's result, is, I would argue, existential. He really sees for the first time, as do his apparatchiks and lickspittles, right, who've supported this regime, come, whatever, right? They're worried about, can this be sustained? So Erdogan, I would argue, is in this sort of holding pattern of processing, understanding, and per Howard's comment of like the cost of repression, he's probably has to be calculating, what do I need to do in order to sort of, retain but augment my base of power, given that I've just lost quite heavily, and this will be really hard to turn around. I don't think he goes about it by essentially democratizing or, making a more accountable government, because that's also a loss for him. I think most of the options for Erdogan are bad in terms of what he does. Ultimately, I think it will falter. I don't know the timeline of this, but he's trying to, I would, in my estimation, sort of put forward a heads I win, tails you lose. The Van, Hakkari, Siirt, other provinces, which has escalated in violence over the last 24 hours, with AKP gunmen wandering around the streets firing Kalashnikovs. The logic there seems to me, as best as we can point out, is let's cause chaos, right? And contest sort of the ability of, in the case of, Van, where the Dem, the Kurds won, got nearly twice as many votes as the AKP guy, who have not been given power, right? Oh. And the more they protest, they'll just label them as terrorists, right? And bang them up and be denied power. And again, that's the big question that Howard asks, is will he stop with the Kurds and the southeastern provinces? I look at somewhere like Istanbul, and İmamoğlu, for him, as Erdogan is the consummate sort of, balance of power. He understands that İmamoğlu is his main nemesis now. He's clobbered Erdogan three times since 2019 in quite humiliating ways. Mm-hmm. I don't think he has the luxury of just ignoring that or leaving İmamoğlu unattended to just go on ruling Istanbul, at the same time as İmamoğlu now beginning to clearly construct a national platform and policy agenda. He's come out in opposition of what's happening in Iran. He said things like he's investing in future things like, you know, I should learn Kurdish, he says, because he's investing in the Kurdish vote as a likely presidential candidate. The problem that he has with Imamoglu, obviously, is Imamoglu right now is about as strong as he can be. I mean, it's hard to just, you know, slap that political ban on him at the appeals court, because this guy just won over 1 out of 2 votes out of 11 million people who voted in Istanbul. If they uphold that ban and, you know, remove him from office, Erdogan has to worry about how far will those repercussions be? Because my estimation, I'm just guessing here, is that it will not be limited to Istanbul, that people across the country will say enough is enough. And he's probably calculating the repression cost of this, but it's clear that he cannot leave Imamoglu unattended.
Those who predicted, those who might be called pessimists, saying that the political Islamists will never leave power easily, will not go quietly, will not concede defeat, historically speaking, political history. Those may be right, maybe, reading these hints of Erdogan's choice now becoming the hard way, maybe. But there's also the economy, Gürdem. The main reason, as the panel agrees, I think, the reason for the current result. What might be the choices of Erdogan now, economically speaking? Because he's cornered, and the way out is a big question mark.
Yeah, and as I was listening to Mr. Sinan Ciddi, he's tightening his iron grasp on the southeastern provinces is not going to help in his quest to attract foreign investment in the country. So he has to find a fine balance toned down in the days ahead so that Mr. Mehmet Şimşek will take stage and do whatever he does. And going back to your question from the start on the economy front, it's I think the roadmap is easy. In the short term, he has Mr. Şimşek at his hand. He's going to be using him for the next 12 to 18 months to attract foreign investment. I think we're going to be further rate hikes from the central bank in April and May, maybe combined in April and May, maybe only in April, as the foreign investors are going to be asking for more yields, given the, I think, in my opinion, political risks have escalated in Turkey with uncertain future for the AKP rising after the elections. And I think there we'll see further tax hikes on nationwide VAT hikes in the days ahead. They'll be trying to lend more on selective sectors that are focused mostly on exports in Europe. And will be some spending cuts on investments. And that's basically it. I mean, as long as Erdogan is there and the system doesn't change, we don't have any further room to have a vision for the future of the Turkish economy changing profoundly without any leap on the democratic front. So I think that's the only thing that he can do is in the next couple of 1 or 2 years that he can be successful. And that success will be painful for the public, more painful for the public than it was in the last 3 or 5 months, or last 10 months, let's say, since the appointment of Mr. Mehmet Şimşek as the Minister of Economy. So his room is like limited to 2024 for the rest of it and 2025 and 2026, who knows where it will be. But we'll be attracting a few billion dollars for the Turkish equity market and for the bond market, perhaps. We'll be adding a couple of billions to the reserves, but the basic picture will not change. Turkish economy will slow down very rapidly. The Turkish people will be suffering as they will be paying the cost of the previous economic policy mistakes that was also made by the Erdogan himself and his men. Now his new man is trying to reverse the situation around, and the costs will be high. There will be no early elections, no constitutional referendum. The economic environment doesn't really permit that. And I think he has to be controlling his repression urge to keep the foreign flows coming into the country.
Early elections are out of the question because Turkey is unable to hold another election economy, as many point out. But success, as Gürdem says, Attila, can it be really sustainable on increased collective pain on the society? How do you see the way out for Erdogan in the economy?
First of all, and I need to emphasize this point that at the risk of reiterating what has been said before, I think Erdogan is as shocked as by these results as CHP and I myself. He will make his final decision regarding economic policy at the end of Eid, the religious holiday. Mm-hmm. Had he won Istanbul, I would have said he would have immediately started negotiations on a new constitution, early elections, whatever. Yeah, I agree with Gülden. That doesn't make sense. So my bias is towards thinking that Erdogan is going to be much more flexible in terms of giving Mehmet Şimşek the authority to do quote-unquote whatever it takes. And yeah, if your object is reducing inflation to, say, 20% and monthly inflation to 1%, a sustainable current account deficit, yeah, these can be achieved. It takes about a year, some pain, but with elections long way away in the horizon, why does Erdogan care? What cannot be changed, and this is why we need to understand that even a well-performing economy may not deliver Erdogan to victory next time, is income distribution. Because it's not necessarily caused by the very structure of the Turkish economy, but by Erdogan's crony regime, as well as what I call the informal caste system in Turkey. Regardless of my merits, as an Alevite or a Kurd, there is no way I can make money in Turkey. This is how bad it is. So yeah, stabilization is perfectly possible, and we can even have a virtuous cycle of financial flows being followed by FDI. I'm not going to waste the time of this audience with sideline issues, but if Trump is reelected and if EU ends its navel gazing and starts new negotiations on a customs union, which is basically cost-free for EU, then we could even see some FDI flowing into Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Can I just ask something, and to Gülden too? Look, my understanding of the economy is very rudimentary. I got a B- in macroeconomics in college, so I'm very proud of that. But my understanding of this has always been, look, if Erdogan was serious about, you know, restructuring the economy back to an even keel, right, to attract voters and make people, you know, satisfied, then the approach to me is basically allowing Mehmet Şimşek to project a course similar to what Kemal Derviş was allowed to do in 2001, right, which is, leave, you know, I don't care about the politics. I want a free hand. Spending has got to be constrained by the government. You know, income, you know, printing money to pay and continuously increase public salaries, retirement salaries has to stop, which equals public misery. And without that, without actually real suffering to actually heal inflation and allow the current account deficit to fall, right, and restructure the balance of payments of the private sector and the government, then we're not going to get anywhere. Right, and but
question,
because that's so painful, if you were to implement such a strategy, that's not going to be attractive to voters because they just clobbered him on Sunday. So, you know, is he serious about economic reform, or is it just, you know, punt it down the road day by day and see what happens?
Go ahead, Gülden, you're first.
Thank you. Well, he cannot be serious about economic reform. He doesn't have the room for that, as you said. He's binded himself with the system. So it's only a couple of years of better macroeconomic management and no other reforms. Maybe a few ones like in the employment sector or something. But I don't think there's going to be a profound change during the term of next Erdogan government. Very simple answer.
Attila?
Yeah, I think the international experience of austerity or belt tightening programs shows us that within 12 to 15 months, the economy bottoms and then moves to a more sustainable path, which also delivers prosperity. Assuming Erdogan is not scheduling his early election or constitutional change fantasy or objective to 2027, there is enough time to make the population suffer the pain at the expense of improving economic performance, and then give them a good year or two before they forget that and move back to Erdogan's side. But Güldem is quite right. No one has time to discuss these issues. But the real economic issue is, how are you going to become a high value added or export driven economy if you don't have any investment in education? And even your own business community is now migrating of all countries to Egypt because regulations are easier to understand. That is not going to change. We're going to get stability, but it should actually be called stagnation. Mm-hmm. Turkey is,
and that will reflect on even the opposition municipalities.
Yeah, I proposed to explain how much of the vote is borrowed from CHP's perspective and how much of it is permanent. Let me just, if I'm allowed 2 minutes, let me tell you that.
Just 1 minute, because clock is ticking.
I think in presidential elections, CHP and Ekrem İmamoğlu stay in good stead to beat Erdogan. In parliamentary elections, it's not that simple. Simply because new welfare voters are more likely than not to support Erdogan in a presidential election.
Presidential election or general elections 2028. We are now back to central politics again, Howard, because local election results are there, but parliament has a composition and Erdogan holds the majority, and also potential cooperators like E Party, Meral Akşener's party, and others are there. And the way is still open for Erdogan, realistically speaking. So each and everyone, you have about 2 minutes to go. Please, in this context, what do you see? What is your last word about the future? Howard.
So I'm not going to predict elections that are 4 years out. I think that Erdogan had envisioned his last term as sort of a seamless handoff to a new generation of AKP technocrats, his own son-in-law for starter, but I think Murat Kurum represents, I mean, he was a terrible candidate, but he represents a sort of person who's come up through the AKP bureaucracy and could represent a legacy. That legacy is now very much at risk. I don't know that the I'm less pessimistic about the AKP's long-term future than I think other panelists are. But I do think that Erdogan's going to have to reassert himself into the future of the AKP in ways that he may not have planned to.
Güldem?
Well, I think what we're having is a creative destruction at the moment in Turkish political landscape within CHP. With the defeat of the AKP, things will be changing. There's going to be further volatility, very severe uncertainty. Economy will not be function at its best, even if Mehmet Şimşek was to do the reforms that he would like to, unless we have an anchor like an IMF. I think things are more likely to sour before they get better. And as we were speaking, I wrote you from the back, the one election was given to Dem Party, the mayorship back. So that's, I think, a very symbolic of what people can do if they increase their voices and stand together. I think that's a lesson for the years ahead. I think things will get worse before they get better.
Atilla, pessimistic or optimistic?
I have two pieces of bad news and one piece of good news for our audience. Bad news, item one. As long as Erdogan remains in power, obviously we're also Kurds and Arabs. People of Turkey will neither experience social peace nor prosperity. Two, judging the local election results, I cannot make a prediction that Erdogan's days are numbered. These are the bad news. The good news is eventually everyone retires or joins his or her ancestors. And when that unfortunate day happens, the rebound of Turkey at every level, from democratization to economic development, is going to be incredibly fast, because we haven't lost our muscle memory from the first decade of the 21st century.
And Sinan, the last word is yours.
We may have a couple of more minutes outside of my thing, but you could do a fire sound. But I will go. I mean, yeah, I'm going to go with Howard and say I'm not going to predict what's going to happen at the next presidential election, because Turkey seems to be stumbling from one election to the next, and we don't seem to get a respite. But I agree. As long as Erdogan's around, you know, I tend to agree with Howard to the extent that I think, you know, don't count him out, or the AKP's chances of, you know, tinkering around the edges of authoritarianism to see how effectively they can hold on to power both nationally and locally. We'll have to see how the weeks and months progress after this, you know, in terms of AKP and legal actions taken against persons, parties and entities. What I will say, though, is this: we've been having this discussion amongst sort of Turkey analysts and watchers for a while, suggesting that Erdogan's ability to name a successor, I think that is a huge flop. If these elections have showed anything, one sort of, you know, leader's ability to nominate his or her successor in Turkish politics has never really been successful. Turkey's political system, as these elections sort of reveal, is just too pluralistic. It's not like Putin's Russia, right, when he just named Medvedev for a while and just see what happens. I think whoever he names, Bayraktar, Soylu, whoever, I don't think it's going to matter, because even within his own circles, there will be contenders and naysayers to that. So, name, you know, think Bülent Arınç, think, God, you know, if you can humor me on this, Abdullah Gül. People are going to speak up and just not take it. They're all hungry for power, not to mention like the CHP sort of emerging sort of leadership. I think the successor argument is gone. I think Turkey will, I agree with Atilla Bey at that point. Post Erdogan, there'll be vibrancy. I'm not sure how quickly it will take for the country to sort of refine its sort of, you know, fast setting after Erdogan, as Atilla pointed out, simply because I think the country needs a considerable amount of collective therapy, but also the reassertion of institutional governance, rights and wrongs, just the rule of law, respect for the rule of law, just these basics about a new social contract, which Erdogan has, I think, torn apart. But I'll also make this prediction, and it's not for the immediate future. The day that Erdogan is finally out of the national picture, one way or another, I think in the future, we will not, the AKP will be done. Look at parties like ANAP. You know, the only parties I see remaining in the long future is the CHP, the MHP, and, you know, others like EU, Devar, Gelecek. That photograph of the table of six from last year, there is nobody left from that table, right, as political leaders. They're all gone, right? They're basically, you know, irrelevant at this point. And so will the AKP be. Once Erdogan is done, AKP is a shell that will just collapse.
We have some seconds, Howard. Centennial of Turkey. Is the presidential system something irreversible? Very briefly.
No. I think that there's... That will depend on who's in power and what sorts of arrangements bring the that new president and that new parliament to power, what sort of coalitions and coalition agreements are created. So, I mean, we're again, you know, sort of looking in the coffee grinds and trying to read the future, but I don't think anything's written in stone.
Thank you, Güldem, Atilla, Sinan and Howard, for tried to shed light on
great
darker
moderation.
Sides.
And... Loved it. Really good questions. Well prepared. Good numbers. I like it.
So thank you all, and let's see. Let's keep following Turkey's puzzling course.